Hey, it's Dr. Trek, Larry Nemechek, coming at you straight out of Portal 47. And you're listening to the Shuttle Pod. Oh, I see what you did there.
Okay, welcome back, friends. We are at a special seminal episode of the Shuttle Pod, and this is episode number 30. My name is Jared Whitley. I'm here with my good friends, Brian Drew.
Hey, everybody.
And then, of course, the straw that stirs the drink here at Trek Movie, or at least has since 2007, Kayla Iacovino.
Hey, guys.
Kayla, you have been with Trek Movie for 10 years, right?
Uh-huh. Yep. I think in the beginning of 2007 is when I started.
Well, wow. Beginning of 2017. We're recording this on January 7th, 2017. So congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah, back in those days, Kayla used to do her science column.
That's right. Science Friday. And then eventually we had to change it to Science Saturday because the actual Science Friday, you know, was like not super excited that we were calling our segment Super Science Friday. So,
I didn't know that.
Because of that, Ira Flatow, who, you know, is the host of Science Friday on NPR, got in contact with me through Facebook. And I guess he found out about the research I had been doing in Antarctica at the time. And he's really into Antarctica and he's been there and he's really interested in it. And that's when he invited me to be on NPR Science Friday for their New Year's show when I was in Antarctica. So I called them on a satellite phone and was on the air there. Eventually did some blogging for them, and that's led to a lot of other things me. So
it's amazing. It's amazing sometimes how one thing can lead to another.
Yeah, yeah, it really is.
Yeah. Well, congratulations. Happy anniversary.
Thank you.
Happy anniversary, Kayla.
Okay. The other thing that occurred to me is the way, if you do the year and the date a certain way, January 2017 is 1701. So, another important Star Trek moment. Or maybe not really. All right, well, so I wanted to start off a little bit. We have a fantastic subject today. I've been looking forward to this for weeks and weeks, since I think, Brian, you first had the idea. But I wanted to talk a teeny bit about the HBO show Westworld. Have you guys seen this?
Oh, yeah. Watched all of it.
I'm about three quarters of the way through.
Okay, so Kayla and I have both seen it, and Brian's working his way through. What is your guys' impression of it so far? Do you like it?
I like but don't love it.
Yeah, I was the same.
Really? I really loved it. I won't say why I love the ending because Brian hasn't seen it, but...
Oh, yeah. There was the ending is very clever. Now, the thing that I like the Anthony Hopkins character and the Jeffrey Wright and the Ed Harris character and then the Evan Rachel Wood character, but I feel like everybody else is filler. However, there's like this... The madam at the robot brothel, right? She gets a lot of attention. Have either of you guys seen
Thandie Newton?
I'm sorry?
Not Thandie Newton.
Yeah, the actress. Thank you. Have either of you guys seen the original Westworld movie?
Long time ago.
I don't know if I've ever seen it.
With Yul Brynner.
Yul Brynner is the famous face in it, but there's another famous Star Trek face playing the role of the robot brothel madam in the 1974 original. I don't know if you remember who it is.
No.
It's actually our very own Majel Barrett Roddenberry.
It's Majel?
Right? Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I completely forgot that.
Yeah, I wanted to watch, the DVD. My mom has the DVD. I watched it at Christmas right before I watched the series. And I'm like, oh my gosh, it's Majel. Good for her.
Cool.
So anyway, there you go. We can find Star Trek connections out of anything.
That's actually very, very true.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so Brian, I hope you enjoy the rest of the series.
Thank you, thank you. Yeah, actually this weekend with the bad weather here in the Northeast may be a good time to catch up on it.
Oh, good idea. Well, we've also been catching up on some other stuff to get to the heart of our episode. We've all been watching a lot of episodes of the second season because our subject today is Dr. Catherine Pulaski, MD.
Mm-hmm. Kate, and good old Kate Pulaski.
Good old Kate. Now, Brian, I think you were the one who had the idea to do a Pulaski episode, correct?
I did.
Now, what is it that you were drawn to? Why do you think this is a good subject matter for us to look into?
Well, you know, I think like most people, when Catherine Pulaski was brought onto the show, I think most people did not like her. She was a pale ripoff of Dr. McCoy at the beginning. Like, it was clear that they were using McCoy as like a template. And when she first came on the show, the character was, I think they felt like the writers almost went out of their way to make her abrasive. And I think that was my general impression of her for many, many, many years. You know, she was just like this one season curiosity, and then Gates came back, blah, 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 blah. My opinion changed, I guess, 3 or 4 years ago when the Blu-rays started to come out, and I watched the entire second season from top to bottom.
Uh-huh.
And I realized that while she definitely does have, obviously, qualities derivative of McCoy, I find her, she's like an outlier among the rest of the cast. Like, she's got much more of an edge to her than everybody else, and I find that refreshing, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I like the fact that she kind of rubs people the wrong way a little bit. I like the fact that she is willing to get in Picard's grill a little bit and kind of annoy him. One of the criticisms that's been made of TNG is that everybody kind of just gets along all the time.
Yeah.
And there's just not a whole lot of tension.
Yeah.
And I like the fact that she kind of bought that in.
People can still be good people and not have the same idea about everything. They can still disagree.
Right. Right.
You know, it's right. You mentioned about getting in Picard's grill. The thing that occurred to me is, as we were rewatching some episodes to prepare for this, is I think a lot of the purpose she's supposed to serve is as someone who's supposed to be like Picard's counterbalance and as someone who's his equal, right? Mm-hmm. Because, mm-hmm. you know, he has a ship's counselor, right? But Deanna kind of serves the same role that, like, Dr. McCoy as someone with a psychology background did for Bones, but Picard and Deanna are not peers.
No.
Right.
And Riker is his protege, and Wesley is his protege's protege, and Data, you know, he's just, well, how would I put it? Indulging Data in his witless exploration of humanity. So there's no one who can really act that for Picard the way we need him to. There's no one to go in and tell him to blow up the damn ship, right? And Pulaski right. kind of does that pretty well.
Hmm. Yeah, yeah. I feel like she shakes things up much more than I guess I would say Beverly.
Yeah, certainly Beverly in the first season.
Yeah, I think Beverly throughout the entire show, but definitely the first season.
Yeah. Yeah, Kayla, what did you think as you've been rewatching some of these episodes?
I'll start this off by saying I have so many thoughts on this. A lot of it is in agreement with what Brian is saying, and a lot of it is in disagreement with what Brian is saying. I think I have, and you know, I think I'm willing to say that the jury is out still for me on Kate Pulaski. I agree with Brian that on a rewatch of season two, particularly Pulaski episodes, I appreciate her more than I did, because growing up, you know, I was a kid when TNG was on the air, and growing up watching it, I really, really disliked Kate Pulaski. And so, you know, having not rewatched it for more than a decade, probably had this ingrained thing of, like, you know, from when I was a child, Pulaski sucks. It was like, you know, the mantra, whenever I would think of her, I'd just be like, ugh, because she's mean to Data.
Mm-hmm.
Who was my right. fave. Like, when I was a kid watching TNG, like, Data was totally my favorite character. And, like, watching her be so mean to him, especially because, you know, well, first of all, I probably watched the show out of order, you know, when I was a kid. I didn't necessarily follow
it. Mm-hmm.
Right, yeah. So I had probably grown to know the characters a lot better and came to know. And so I was used to the classic TNG, everybody loves each other, everybody gets along, everybody is a good person. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden they throw in this woman who's, like, totally disrespecting him. And I still don't forgive her for that. You know, the whole thing about how she doesn't pronounce his name correctly. She calls him Data. He specifically explains, you know, my name isn't Data, it's Data. And she's even like, oh, what's the difference? You know, and so she continues to call him Data. And it's like, if, you know, she totally sees, objectifies him. And I had in my mind already accepted him as a person. He has a rank, you know, people call him sir, they show him respect. And here she is, like, if it were me and someone called me by a name that's not my name and I corrected them and then they continued to do it, that's just, like, beyond rude, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's purposefully condescending. So that, like, I feel like I never let her get away with that. So, like, that was, like, the vein that I was always judging her by.
And it's not just in that first episode because I think it's The Child where she first appears, where she makes the reference. But it's not just that one. Like in the and we'll probably do a an episode by episode blowdown here. But in Elementary, Dear Data, she like brazenly confronts him where she says to Geordi, "You're asking him to do stuff, and he can't because he's not human. He doesn't understand.
I mean,
what
he doesn't get it
behavior.
Like, which is true though. But she's right though.
That's the thing is I actually agree with what she was saying because I think the game they were playing was stupid and it would be more fun to challenge him. But she still didn't need to be like, oh, he is just not capable of that because he is just a machine. Blah blah blah. It's like, lady, even if you feel that way, like. Even if you believe he doesn't have feelings and whatever. Like, well, first of all, Geordi does. And it's, you know, if anything, if you're really going to totally say he's a machine, you know, I almost try to imagine her speaking to Data as if it were me speaking to Siri. Because I have no respect for Siri. Siri's a piece of crap sometimes. I try to tell it to do things and it never understands. So I can see, I am trying to get in that mindset of like, she has this idea that he's not really a person, right? But, but even if you totally accept that, like, you know, Data is friends with Geordi, and so Geordi's feelings will be hurt if you're attacking his friend, right? So at very least, she could respect Geordi's feelings.
Yeah, she's being insensitive to two of her crewmates.
Yeah, and how do you reconcile the fact, if she's really going to say, I don't believe he's a human being, I don't believe he has feelings, I don't believe he deserves respect, how can you reconcile that with the fact that he's lieutenant commander of a starship?
Yeah.
I mean, he's risen through the ranks just like anybody else. And so how do you separate those two things?
But there are other people that Data does run into during the course of TNG, other people in Starfleet, including obviously Commander Maddox.
Sure.
But there are a couple other people, I think, in
Redemption Part 2.
In Redemption Part 2, there was that commander on another starship that Data's in temporary command of, who clearly has no respect for Data whatsoever. The Sutherland, right. On the Sutherland. The idea of an android being on a starship, I think, in the TNG era is still a very exotic idea to a lot of people.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
And she's one of those people that's articulating that kind of, I guess, prejudice that is probably felt by many.
I suppose so. And I think that the thing that you should do is accept her view on this, and maybe if you disagree with it, try to just show her why you disagree and have a real conversation about it. Like I said, I think for me, a lot of my feelings towards her is really maybe visceral is the word, just because I think, again, when I was watching it very young, I was like, nuh-uh, you do not disrespect my Data. And, and so I have this prejudice against her. But I think if I were to meet her, this person in real life, if I was really to meet Kate Pulaski in real life, I would more try to understand her prejudice and maybe try to show her why I didn't feel that way. And probably we would learn something from each other. That's the beauty of it.
Yeah.
And she does come around during
the
season.
She does. Okay, of course, at peak performance, which is an episode I always have a strong memory of, is when she's like finally rooting for Data. It's partly selfish, right? Because she just wants to show up this guy who's a real jerk. But she really
but
does.
She felt
like,
bad about it.
She did. She felt she actually
genuinely
went, she said,
cared
I'm
about his feelings.
She said, I'm sorry to Data. She actually said, I'm sorry to him. And so she did show actually real empathy towards him once she got to know him. So, you got to give her some credit for that. I think.
Right.
So something I want to say like up front before I forget to say it is, so we're talking about like, the Bones clone idea. And I think that's very true. I think that was definitely the attempt. And I love Bones. He's my favorite character from the original series. And to me, his sort of grittiness is sort of comic relief. And somehow, when he acts like, because Bones is totally outright racist, often.
Especially, toward
Vulcans? To Spock.
Yeah, but Spock can also be very racist to humans. Yeah.
Oh, well, true. But I mean, I think maybe Bones is just more overt about it.
Yeah, well, Spock's a Vulcan. He's not going to be, obviously he's not going to be as irascible as McCoy. But
well,
they both...
Yeah.
It's an argument. It's basically watering down an argument between logic and emotion.
Sure.
I guess. That's what it is.
Yeah. But I mean, in similar ways, so there is definitely this similar vein of like Bones's attitude towards Spock often, which is, I will admit, downright racist often. And then like sometimes I'm like, dude, Bones, like, come on, let up a bit. That's not cool. Like sometimes he's just really a complete jerk. And you know that Spock does have feelings, so that's really messed up. And Pulaski, acts the same way towards Data, where it's this idea of, oh, he doesn't have feelings anyway. But somehow I feel like when Pulaski is acting this way, this brash, you know, harsh way, it comes across as almost like some kind of smugness. When she does it, it's this like, yeah, I'm better than you. And I think when with Bones, it doesn't feel that way. And
I agree.
Yeah. So that's where I think.
I mean, I feel like.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I feel like when Bones is taunting Spock, it always feels like a little brother trying to pick a fight with his big brother, where it's like he's going to take a couple cheap shots, but it doesn't matter because the bigger brother has longer arms and he can just shove him away, right? Whereas with Pulaski and Data, because Data, you know, his whole thing is that he's like got this childlike wonder, you know, and in Tasha's you know, memorial in her hologram, she even says Data looks at the world like a child. In that case, it kind of seems more like bullying.
Yes, so thank you. That's a very good way to say it.
There's a power distance there where the aggressor is on the more powerful side, whereas in TOS, the aggressor is on the less powerful side.
I think that's huge. That's really good job on seeing that, Jared. I think that.
Thank you.
Yeah, I agree. And I also think that Spock and McCoy, their arguing is kind of just the way the two of them relate to one another.
Yeah, because they genuinely care about each other.
Right. They do. There was always thing underneath it. Like you know, and there's the same thing where you see in other kinds of relationships where something may seem like they're being harsh, but really it's encouragement. It's like, you know, sometimes you see Picard doing this to Wesley as sort of a father figure, but there's even in other relationships where the two are more equals, one is sort of maybe being harsh to the other, but it's because they need that little kick, you know? And in the end, the second person comes back around and is like, thank you, you know, kind of a thing. And it was never like that, I think, between Pulaski and Data. She wasn't like trying to be like, hey, I'm pushing you because I know you can be better. It's I'm pushing you because I don't know if she had some inferiority complex or what, but it was this whole, I need to elevate myself above you. That's how it came across anyway, I felt. So that's why I had such a hard time with Pulaski. And I don't think I've totally, like I said, I agree with Brian that on a rewatch, I really appreciate this element of drama that she brings to the interior of the crew. But I don't think I can completely forgive her for being so nasty sometimes. I don't know. It's jury's still out, like I said.
Well, and also, she never got the chance to grow more, right? We only saw 1 year.
That's fair.
For 3 years, right. You know. She probably would have bought Data his first drink or something like that.
I'm of the belief that those two would have developed a relationship to the point where I think maybe she almost would have become a mentor for Data.
Yeah.
And I think those two, if Data was going to end up really bonding with anybody, it might have been her. Like, I could see them becoming very close.
Yeah.
But we'll never know, obviously.
Yeah, Kate never came back after the second season. She is mentioned passingly, I looked on Memory Alpha, in two other TNG episodes, and then they name drop her in the Voyager finale, which I'd never realized, but that's kind of cute that they did that.
I didn't know that either.
So I have a question for you guys. Something I never knew is, why did Pulaski leave and never come back, and what was the real reasons behind the scenes for the Crusher and her switching and then Crusher coming back?
Well, I with Gates, I think, wasn't it? I think Gates liked to complain a lot, and Maurice Hurley didn't like any of the actors complaining too much, so he just got rid of her, basically.
Wow. Yeah, that's what it says. I mean, you know, and all I know is what I read on Memory Alpha and what I saw on the Chaos and the Bridge documentary. But the conflict was there between Gates and Maurice Hurley.
Yeah, for the most part.
Because in The Child, which was the first episode of season two, they make it very, you know, very clear. I thought that they weren't planning to bring Crusher back. They said she went off to be head of Starfleet Medical,
which is a heck of a promotion. Correct.
Yeah, so they're saying, you know, she's gone off to bigger and better things, you know. And I thought it was kind of weird, too, because she had been this main member of the cast, and there's not really any explanation. There's no lead up to it. It's just like they start the season like, oh, by the way, she left for Starfleet Medical. Moving on.
Right.
But why did she come back? Why did Diana Mulder leave?
Well, I don't think the chemistry between her and the cast ever really solidified, I guess. There's a lot of... Even in interviews, if you watch, even on like, you know, the Blu-rays and whatnot, she won't really come out and say anything bad about the cast, and the cast won't say anything bad about her. But there's like clearly something went down. I don't know what it was. I think the impression I got is that the cast was not very welcoming to her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, on Memory Alpha it says, ultimately, Muldaur found working on the show an unhappy experience. It wasn't what she hoped it would be. She stated there was no imagination on the show, and she felt that everyone was out for themselves, and they weren't really happy she was there. However, I don't know how... It's probably more complicated than that. That seems like a kind of a,
right,
a harsh...
Right, as it always is.
Yeah. Hmm. I've never seen her at a convention. I don't know if either of you have. I don't know if she's ever been to one.
She was supposed to come last year, but she's not in the greatest of health.
Ah, yeah.
She was supposed to... I was looking forward to seeing her, actually.
Yeah. Wow. So yeah. She's lived a good long life.
Yeah. She's had a great career. Diana Muldaur, obviously... was in the original series, two episodes. She was in Return to Tomorrow and Is There in Truth No Beauty.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She's terrific in the second one there.
Yeah, she's phenomenal.
She's a great actress. And I really like her.
Yeah, she is. She's a 3-time Emmy nominee. I mean, she's no lightweight.
Yeah.
She right after she left TNG, she went on to L.A. Law for 3 years. And I was a big L.A. Law fan back in the day. She played a character named Rosalind Shays, who is this repulsive human being. And she was phenomenal in the role. She got nominated for 2 Emmys while she played that role.
Wow, good for her.
Yeah, no, she was really cool. And like I said, she was in the 2 episodes of TOS. She was in another pilot that Jane did called Planet Earth.
So she was like,
she knew Jane, mm-hmm. obviously.
Sounds like
And she said that, you know, the offer to be on TNG came out of the blue. Like, he just called her one day and wanted, you know, to feel her out about coming in. And she was thrilled to come back. But it just sometimes things, you know, don't work out.
It's kind of sad.
If you don't feel very good about the show and you leave and you go on one of the biggest shows at the time and then you start getting award nominations, I think your cognitive bias is going to be, I did the right thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, now I did want to point this out. I think that there's kind of a distaste for Pulaski. Maybe this is reading too much into it, but she is the only major character where the actress was cast when she was over the age of 40. And I don't know if there's any kind of, like, ageism against Dr. Pulaski, but I did think that was interesting. I wanted to point it out.
She's actually the oldest member of the cast when she was on the show. She's older than Patrick.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, because I looked at her birthday, too, and she was born in 38, and Patrick's born in 40.
Oh, wow. So
she's the oldest member of the cast. I don't know. It didn't more... I never even thought of it.
Yeah.
You know, one thing that I
never occurred to me.
One thing that I kept questioning of myself when I was rewatching this last time the Pulaski episodes, is, do I have a bias against her for being a woman? Not because she's just a woman in power, but because she's a brash woman. You know, mm-hmm. she's like pretty hardened.
And well, I bring it up because she's also an older woman, and that's unusual.
Yeah.
On track.
Well, because sometimes I wonder if I don't know that this is true, but I try to question my own motives, my own biases. When am I saying, you know, I accept Bones being like this because he's a man, but when a woman does it, it makes her a bitch.
You know?
I don't know. I don't think so. I think I've tried to be to step back from that and look at her just based on her actions, but I still do question whether I have that bias.
It also could be a bias based on her career is one that is supposed to be more nurturing. I mean, she heals people, right? And so mm-hmm. that you may think, wait, you're supposed to have a bedside manner as well. So it could be for a couple of different reasons.
She seems to be able to turn on that bedside manner when she wants to, though.
Yeah, she does.
You see her.
She does.
You know, so.
She's good to her patients. She always seems to fight for her patients.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, she appears to be like a superlative physician, like Kate Pulaski, like maybe even superior to Beverly.
No, there's actually one episode where they spell it out that Pulaski actually is a better doctor than Beverly, because in the episode Pen Pals, you remember where their Data becomes friends with that little girl, Sarjinka, mm-hmm. this alien girl? Mm-hmm. She comes on to the Enterprise, they've violated the Prime Directive, and Pulaski knows this trick to wipe someone's memory. And she does it, and then the year later in the episode Who Watches the Watchers, they try to do it to one of those quote proto-Vulcan humanoids unquote, and Beverly says, I know that this is something Pulaski could do, but I can't do it.
Interesting. Yeah. I forgot all about that.
Yeah.
Well, I would argue that, you know, just because she can do one specific technique better doesn't necessarily mean that she's a better doctor. I know a lot of people will say that Pulaski is a better doctor than Beverly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if we have time, I would like to talk about Beverly, even though I know this is about Pulaski.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, we should.
Because I, have been surprised to learn about all the Beverly hate out there.
What?
Because I actually really, really like Beverly Crusher.
Yeah, me too.
And a lot of people just
I don't hate Beverly. I just don't think she's all that. That's all.
I was just surprised. Maybe hate is a strong word, but like I actually really, really she came to be one of my like favorite characters and someone who like I always really looked up to watching the show.
Yeah. And of Fair course, enough. If Gates McFadden's agent or publicist is listening to this, we'd be delighted to have her on the show. No, I think the problem with the Beverly character is just they didn't do very much with her.
There are only a few
Beverly-centric episodes. I've always thought of her as the most underused resource in all of Star Trek because she's a talented lady. She can do comedy really well. Like there's that one where everybody's disappearing and she's like making snide wisecracks to the computer because that's the only person she can talk to. I think she's talented. They just didn't do that much with her.
Yeah, I agree. But I think the episodes that she is featured heavily in, I have a very strong memory of those.
Yeah.
I always looked up to her as someone like that, you know, she's this kind, caring woman who's reached this very mm-hmm. high peak in her career. Yeah. And yep. I think it's partly as a young girl watching it, it's this idea that you don't have to be a brash person to get to the top, which a lot of times, you know, women who are in positions of power are seen as sort of bitchy and mean. It's because they've had to struggle to get to that point and they've had to be, you know, like living in a man's world kind of a thing. So they've had to mm-hmm. act more masculine to get to where they are. And I saw Beverly as a very feminine person who had all the respect of her peers and she didn't have to act like a man to gain it. So I think that always like really resonated with me.
Good. Have you met Gates McFadden?
I have briefly, yeah.
Oh, that's good. Maybe we should have dinner with her in Vegas this year.
Yeah.
That could be a little trickier than some of the others.
Yeah, I think so.
That we've had dinner with.
Brian, did you have something else to mention?
No, I find Beverly very bland. I don't think Gates is a very good actress. Mm. I think Diana Muldaur can act circles around her.
Yeah, I would agree with that. The thing about Gates McFadden is her training was actually as a dancer, not as an actress.
Yeah, and I've seen her dance. She's amazing.
Yeah.
She's a very talented woman. I just feel like her range as an actress is kind of limited, in my opinion. That's all.
I
just never had a good feel for Beverly. She's the only character in TNG I never really like could wrap myself around.
Mm. Yeah, no, I think a lot of people feel that way. And when I said earlier a lot of Beverly hate out there, that was maybe a strong word, but I think a lot of people feel that way, Brian. And so, but I think that's fine. I'm happy with that. I was just like, that was just surprised because I hadn't had a lot of conversations with people about the character of Beverly, maybe because poorly used.
Yeah, one of our Trek movie colleagues has a very particular way of referring to her, which we will not go into here.
Okay, well, after
it has something to do with that ghost episode.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Uh huh.
We'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
We'll leave
it what at is that. It? Sub Rosa.
Sub Rosa.
Yeah, Sub Rosa, which is
the threshold of TNG.
Yeah, it could very well be.
Yeah. Although
right up there with Shades of Grey.
Well, see, but Shades of Grey isn't even an episode, right? That's a victim of
it's a clip show.
Yeah, it's a victim of the writer's strike, and so when you talk about like worst episodes ever, I don't think that should even be counted as an episode.
Well, it's a budget thing. It wasn't even the writer's strike. It was a budget thing.
Yeah. I will say about Beverly, you mentioned Sub Rosa and her Irish heritage. I love when she's barking at Q in one episode, and he turns her into an Irish setter. I thought that was cute that he chose that. And like the color of the dog even goes well with the color of her hair.
Yeah. It's just,
we need to have a Q-centric episode, is all I'm going to say right now. But let's go into some of the episodes that we rewatched to focus in on Pulaski a little bit, if y'all don't mind. We watched The Child, Elementary Dear Data, Unnatural Selection, The Icarus Factor, and Peak Performance. We talked a little bit about Peak Performance, but are there any of those episodes that one of you two want to hone in on specifically? Let's start with The Child, because that's her first appearance. It's also, incidentally, Guinan's first appearance.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It was the season premiere of season 2.
Exactly. And it was, from what I recall, I think they're reusing a script that had initially been intended for Star Trek Phase 2.
Correct. Ilea would have been impregnated.
Yeah. Yeah. Ilea and Decker were, or, you know, Riker and Troy are their analogs for TNG from what characters that Gene wanted to do in Star Trek Phase 2. So it makes sense for her to continue that. What did you guys think of Pulaski in this episode?
Well, I think this is where she's had her most abrasive, obviously. She, like, calls Data, you know, Data, that whole really condescending thing happens. She's, I mean, once she has to get involved with, like, the care for Deanna, she's great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she looks after Deanna, fiercely looks after Deanna.
Yeah, she does.
So,
which is
but
needed.
Yeah, I mean, when it comes back to that whole thing about first impressions about somebody, I mean, she does come off as being condescending and nasty to Data.
Yeah, and she's also a little bit condescending to Picard, but it's sort of okay because I don't know. It's she doesn't show up for work basically, and then he goes to find her in 10 forward. But to be fair, she's talking to Deanna and
she's actually at work right there.
She is actually at work. So to be fair, yeah. But I think the idea was like we're throwing her in here to sort of balance Picard out, which I think in the end he probably needed because the first few seasons Picard is pretty uptight. And I think he needed someone to get in his face and be like, look, dude, chill out a little bit.
Yep.
So that maybe was good for him. But definitely, like, when he comes and meets her for the first time, he's like, I don't know, you know, maybe at your last position, it was more lax around that. He starts to chastise her, and then she's basically like, sit down and shut up. I need to tell you something.
Yeah, she cuts him off. She basically cuts him off.
She does. She completely cuts him off. And so part of me was like, you know, again, because I'm like protective, right, over the characters that I've come to know and love, and I'm like, excuse me, random lady, you do not speak to. Do you know who this is?
Random lady.
You know, that's the first time seeing her. As far as you're concerned, she's just some woman who's like being introduced, and you're like a little cautious of her, you know, and you're just like, do you know who you're speaking to? This is Captain Picard of the flagship. So.
See, but then that's where she's being fiercely loyal to her patient, right? Because that's more important to her than protocol.
Her Hippocratic Oath is going to take precedence, obviously.
Yeah, it's definitely defensible the way she acts, but at the same time, I'm a little bit like,
From a first impression standpoint, it is not a great first impression.
No, it's not. It's not.
Yeah.
Okay, Elementary Dear Data. We touched on that a little bit. What did you guys think of that episode?
It's a fun show. I enjoy it.
I forgot that hardly anything happened in that episode. Because I guess Moriarty comes back later and then we get the real story with him.
Yeah.
Right.
The
second episode is actually much better than this one. The one with Barclay.
Yeah. It was like an entire episode of them just introducing the Moriarty character. And then like at the end, he's just like, okay, well, I will return control of the ship to you. Have a good day. The end.
from like a three-act structure of like rising action and, you know, finale and denouement, the episode doesn't really follow traditional storytelling techniques.
Yeah,
it was bizarre. But her role in it, I think, is important because it's like we mentioned before, you know, she's saying to Data and to Geordi, you know, we have to, the game that you guys are playing in the holodeck isn't worth anything because he knows all of the Holmes stories by heart, and so it's not a challenge. He's not deducing anything. He's just, you know, regurgitating knowledge. But then she goes on to say that's all he can possibly do is regurgitate knowledge. He doesn't have the ability to think critically and to actually make deductions, which is kind of surprising because, like, certainly, I mean, I'm surprised that she would think a computer wouldn't be able to make a deduction. Even in the original series, they would be like, computer, what do you think we should do? You know, they would ask it to make deductions about stuff. So, but I think she was right that the game they were playing was silly and pointless.
Yep. Yeah.
But the way she went about it was a little mean.
Yeah, she's behaving a little bit more like a bully and less like a coach.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Right.
Yeah, there's also that weird scene in 10 Forward where she's eavesdropping on them. And, like, she doesn't even turn around to talk to them. And I'm gonna blame that on the director. But, like, this scene just looks so stupid. It's like, that's not how people talk.
Yeah.
We will know.
That was bad.
Yeah.
That was bad.
This is dumb.
The entire time she's staring at, she's in the foreground, they're in the background, and she never turns and looks. Well, she finally does, but like, yeah, the first like exchange of lines.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's not looking at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's weird. It's weird.
Mm. Yeah. It doesn't work. Okay. So did you guys watch Unnatural Selection?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. The Deadly Years.
I think this is one of those. I think one of the reasons why people are a little prejudiced against Wesley and make all these jokes about, oh, Wesley always saves the day, is they judge him by the first season, right? And all the kind of dumb Wesley cliches only happen in the first season. And from second season on, I think the Wesley character is actually great.
I
have no problem with him. I have no problem with him after that. Yeah, I agree.
And I think it's the same. Some of the same prejudice against Pulaski may just be against early TNG, because this episode is there's a difference between an homage and just being derivative. And this episode is pretty derivative.
Yep. Yeah, there is something interesting in this episode, which never gets followed up on later, when they need to find Pulaski's transporter pattern so they can reconstitute her at her younger age before she got infected.
Yeah.
And Picard calls her former captain.
Mm-hmm.
And he tells Picard about how she like knew Picard's record backwards and forwards, mm-hmm. and was like, as soon as she found out there was an opening on the Enterprise, she jumped on it. That says a lot about the character, but they never follow up on that.
No, like not at all.
Picard even seems fascinated by it, and then they never follow up on it in another episode or anything.
I feel like that's part of this long game. If she had stuck around, that, like talking about, you know, Jared, you mentioned earlier, she could have become a mentor to Data. I think she could have also become like a mentee to Picard in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And they could have really set her up for that if she had stayed on the show.
Yeah, I think so. So that was just interesting, like that she clearly had high regard for Picard.
Yeah, that made me happy.
But publicly would not show it.
Right. Yeah.
So there were a lot of layers to that character. Yeah, had there been more time, we probably would have learned a lot more about what made Kate Pulaski tick.
Mm-hmm. See, and if I can, I mean, is there anything else you want to say on that episode? Because this segues into what I want to say about the Icarus factor.
The only thing I wanted to mention is just something sort of a little bit off topic. It's just something interesting I noticed in the episode that's a little bit messing with canon, is the fact that the whole reason this disease where they age really quickly came about is because they were creating genetically modified humans.
Yeah.
And like, I'm pretty positive that had been pretty much banned at this time.
Yeah.
And it's, I don't think it's ever completely retconned.
No. Well, I think because it's a forgettable episode, people forgot about it. It's like people will make a big deal. So in Relics, the episode with Scotty, there's an episode where they beam Scotty and Geordi back through the shields of the ship that he's on. I can't remember the name. It's embarrassing. And people will say, oh, well, they figured out some trick for how to do that. Or, oh, they timed it to coincide with the 40-second microcycle of the shields like O'Brien did in the episode The Wounded or whatever. And so if people care about the episode, they care about retconning it. But if they don't, they just blow it off.
Well, it's funny. If you read the Memory Alpha page, it's really silly. It says something, it mentions this discrepancy, and then it says something about, oh, except the fix, if you will, the retcon may be that they weren't genetically modifying people, they were, quote, creating them. And I'm like, whoever wrote this does not know what genetically modified means.
Yeah.
So there's no good explanation that I've ever seen for it.
Nah. No. Just one of those things.
It's not perfect.
Nope.
Okay.
Well, you could pick Star Trek canon apart in terms of inconsistencies if you really want to. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, it's fun to do that.
It is. But that the point being, it's fun to pick it apart, but but just don't take it too seriously.
Oh, for sure. Mm-hmm. In the end, it's just a show.
It is.
Yep.
Get a life, people.
Exactly. All right, moving on.
Okay, so the Icarus factor. So I think this is a really good performance and use, a good performance by Diane Muldaur and good use of Pulaski in a kind of mediocre episode. Because the scenes with her, I remember really liking, but the rest of the episode, it just kind of made me roll my eyes. I didn't think that the conflict with Riker and Kyle Riker worked particularly well. It kind of felt a little bit cliche, and Riker behaved maybe a little bit too immaturely.
And then we find out that Kate Pulaski was in a very intense romance with Kyle Riker.
He was boinking Riker's dad.
See, and that was more interesting to me than any of the Riker stuff was Kate's.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just not a well-done episode. But this is an episode where Pulaski elevates it. So kudos to her.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we could talk a little bit about peak performance. We mentioned that a little bit before. Are there any other Pulaski episodes that we reviewed? Brian, you said watched a couple more than these five. Are there any ones that you wanted to touch on?
No, not really. There's just, those were the highlights, no doubt.
Yeah, I think the only one where Pulaski is the main character is Unnatural Selection. And so everything else, we're kind of picking through her as a support character in someone else's story.
Right.
True, yeah.
But yeah, she is great in peak performance. She is more of like a coach to Data in that, which works extremely well.
Mm-hmm. And she, like I said earlier in the episode, she actually goes to Data when, because, you know, he loses this game of Stratagema, and then he thinks there's something wrong with him. And he's basically doing the Android equivalent of sulking in his room. Yeah. Being upset that he lost. And she comes to him and she says, "I'm sorry I put you in that situation." And it was a real apology.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's her shining moment.
Well, and I think she feels like she used him, right? She's like, "I don't like this
guy." She knows
guy.
She did.
Yeah, I'm going to use this android who has some superior skills for my ego.
Right. Right.
And to give this other man like his just desserts for, you know.
For being mean. So arrogant. Because that other guy, which is, you know, I think... As an audience member, watching Pulaski be on the other side of, you know, we're sort of with her because everyone can come together to hate that guy. The guy who, I forget his name, but the guy who's the strategist.
Sierra Nicole Rami.
And whoever, the actor who plays him is awesome because that character.
David Lander. Yeah.
That character, even just his little mouth movements and he's such a little, little creepy jerk. Mm-hmm. And he just, the actor who plays him does it so well. But I think everyone can come together to be like, even if you hate Pulaski, you're like, you know what, Pulaski, we're on the same team this time because that guy's a jerk.
The actor's name is David Lander. He played Squiggy on Laverne and Shirley.
Oh, no way.
That's where he's from.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. So, yeah, Pulaski finally came around, and then, you know, we didn't see her that much. Yeah, then she was gone.
Never to be heard from again, really.
Not really, no.
Has she been – I don't read a lot of TNG novels. Has she ever – popped up in any novels?
Apparently, her mirror universe counterpart appeared in the novella The Worst of Both Worlds, which frankly sounds like a parody more than anything else.
Yeah. Interesting. So she kind of just, once they were done with her, the character really did fade away.
Yeah. Which is weird, unlike Tasha, who they kept talking about her and who she came back a couple times.
But I still have to say this, for someone who was around for not very long, she made a pretty strong impression on the Star Trek universe. I mean,
clearly, yeah.
Most Trekkie, anyone who would call themselves a Trekkie, I think, would have an opinion about Pulaski.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah. There's a road in Baltimore, they're like Pulaski Highway, and whenever I drive past it, I think of her.
Nice.
That can be the Trek anecdote for this week. Yeah, there's even a Wikipedia entry for the Pulaski Highway.
Does it mention Dr. Pulaski?
No, I think it's for someone who was real.
Yeah. That's probably more important.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, if you Google Pulaski, she's definitely not the first hit. Sometimes this can be my Trek anecdote for today is like,
let's hear it.
Sometimes I forget that not everyone is always thinking about Star Trek. And so if I put something into Google that's like an obscure Star Trek thing and I'm like, I'm surprised when the Star Trek related thing is not the first hit.
The first thing, yeah.
But we have another Trek anecdote.
Hopefully the Google AI will catch up eventually.
Right. It'll realize it's Kayla talking here, Google. You know what I want.
Yeah.
When I put Pulaski. Come on. But we have another Trek anecdote.
Yeah. Is this how we want to end the episode?
Yeah. I think it would be.
Yeah. By all means.
So, I guess before we go into that, I just like, let's like wrap up our feelings. I've kind of said mine already that, I'm willing to come around on Pulaski. I still love Beverly and I'm totally team Bev, but I don't hate Pulaski as much as I did. I appreciate her more after a rewatch.
Very good.
And how about you guys?
There you go.
Agreed.
Yeah, I completely agree.
Yeah, and I think we all
obviously
because you were the tip of the spear on this one. It would have been nice to have a little bit more of her if she's just been on for 2 years.
Yeah.
Or to come back as a guest star or something.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, or like, yeah. There's one episode, I think the name of the episode is called Ethics in season 5, where Worf breaks his spine. And there's like another doctor who comes in and she's got this supposedly unethical research. And, you know, there's a conflict there. It would have been nice to have Pulaski come back for an episode like that, where she could have been, she and, and Beverly could have butted heads on something.
That would have been cool.
Mm. Yeah. That would have been cool.
Oh, wow. What can you do?
And I think maybe we should have a Beverly episode at some point, because I mean, sure. I mean, maybe I came on too strong with my love for Beverly in this, and I think Brian, you seem a little timid after I was like, Beverly is the best and so inspiring. Well, Brian's just like, hey, you're.
I don't want to rain on somebody else's favorite like that.
No, yeah. Please do, because this is. I think, like I said, I'm interested to know that like other people don't like her, and it makes me look at her in another way. So I'd love to have more of an opportunity for you to say like things that were bad about her that you didn't like about her. Because I know a lot of people feel that way. We were talking about this in the Trek movie Slack recently. And a lot of the Trek movie contributors really dislike Beverly.
Really?
And I'm like totally team Bev. Everyone's just like, she's so bland. There's nothing to her. Maybe I just ascribed my own feelings to her.
That's okay, though.
Yeah. But hey, no, you're totally welcome to rain on my parade anytime. I think that's the fun part about some of the discussions we have, is that we don't always agree. And yep. I know that there are people, by the way, we're going to have like multiple Trek New Deads today. And I know I'm dragging this ending out, but
no,
I really wanted to say that some other people I've been talking to recently that have been listening to the podcast. Hello, everyone. We love you guys. When we hear that you're listening, it makes us very happy.
Yes. Yes. Thank you so much for listening. We really do appreciate it.
We really do. And it's great to hear feedback. Sometimes, you know, we wonder if we're just talking to ourselves, but it's awesome to hear people are listening. And what's even better is that I've heard people say that they actually yell out loud at their phone, at their car speakers, whatever it is, however they're listening to the podcast, when they disagree with us. And I think that's nice. Awesome.
Yeah.
Because the best podcasts I listen to are the ones that get me riled up like that. I'm like, no, what the heck? You forgot about this, or you didn't talk about that, or I totally disagree with you, or I totally agree with you. So that's awesome. I'm so glad that you guys are enjoying what we're saying enough. Even if you totally disagree with it, I just love that that you're getting, they're that passionate about it. So that's awesome. And please reach out to us more too in the comments and on Twitter and everything.
Yeah,
let us know.
Do.
And let us know if you disagree. And we're going to start, I think we should start, you know, bringing more of those comments onto the onto the show.
Fire back where the readers respond. Listeners.
And also, if you have a suggestion for a show idea, you know, please, by all means, don't hesitate to put in the comments section. We'd love to hear
it. We do read them.
We do. Yes, we do read them.
And we have one that's a little self-congratulatory, but we'd like to start the year off with reading this one right now, if that's okay.
Yeah, do it.
Okay. This is from Cygnus X. So Cygnus X, whoever you are on the internet, thank you for posting this.
He's one of our regulars.
He's a Trek movie regular. Yeah.
This is in response to our 50th anniversary episode, where we sort of did a summary of the year and looking a little bit ahead to Discovery. And I shared a Trek anecdote about how I hated using a trackpad on my laptop instead of my mouse. And I quoted Deanna when she loses her empathy, when she yells out at Beverly, how do you people live like this? Because I said that to some of my friends who use their trackpads all the time. So Cygnus X says, well, that was a very pleasant episode of Shuttlepod to end the year with. And I have to mention that I share Jared's affliction with regard to laptop trackpads. Notwithstanding people's indomitable willingness to suffer through using those things, the verdict is in. They suck. Hopefully, 2017 will be full of good Trek news. Discovery will be a good show, faithful to the spirit and values of the TOS. To the future, the undiscovered country. And then this is very nice of him, he says, or she says. And to Kayla, Brian, Jared, and everyone else who contributes to this site, including my fellow members of the Trek movie rabble, Happy New Year. So
lovely sentiment.
Very lovely. Thank you so much. Thank you for sharing those positive words.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It was a nice way to end the year.
Absolutely. All right. Well, with that, we can close the hailing frequencies on the episode. This episode about Dr. Pulaski. Let us know what you think about The Good Doctor in the comments below. And we will see you guys in a couple weeks. This is Jared on January 7th, 2017, signing out along with my good friends.
Hey, this is Kayla saying goodbye. Thanks again, you guys.
This is Brian. Bye, everybody.
Take care.